This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, this is going to be a fun day. Ellie Marr was supposed to be on the program. We had arranged it really carefully because she has a release on May 1st. And then she discovered her due date was May 1st. So we said, okay, Ellie, let's rearrange this. And so we set it up for today. And so Ellie was supposed to be on today because she has a great new book. And it's just, you know, we're so excited that we were able to get her before she had the baby. Unfortunately, she had the baby yesterday afternoon. Well, not unfortunately, very fortunately. She got her bundle of joy, Stork, maybe right here straight from Florida, arrived, and she had her baby yesterday afternoon. And quite by surprise, and babies can do that. So anyway, that takes care of Ellie. And so she was supposed to be on, and I was going to talk to her for 30 minutes about her book. And now I'm waiting for Allison Pataki to call in, and I just sitting down here, and I'm going to say, where is Allison? Where is Allison? I get this message. I think we have a little problem. Something to do with, I don't know. We'll see. I'm just waiting. And see if she's going to call in, because I really want to talk to her. She writes historical mysteries, and not mysteries, historical novels. And I am a person who just, I love historical novels. So I must have a collection of maybe 1,000 historical novels. And they go sort of along with my collection of military books. Because I love always to know about military events. I'm really big on I love battles. By the way, so many of the books that I have really cover the battles from various wars. Well, can you imagine what the books are going to be written about today about the Ukraine? And so I love when somebody writes a novel that really brings that whole time to life, so people can really visualize the you know, when you read about a battle or you read in history. Some people just, you know, can't spend hours reading about one particular subject. But it is so marvelous how a novelist can take an era and just with introducing a few characters, some from history, some that they make up, and bring you to that spot in time. And I love that. And that's what Allison Pataki does. And also her brother, Owen. They've both been on the program before. And you know, I'm just hoping that she's going to be able to call in, because she was just sent me a message something about her daughter's school. So I'm going to wait and we'll see. And meanwhile, I've spoken often about playlists, my morning playlist. People will say sometimes to me, well, what keeps you going? And it's you know, it's difficult. We have in this world, and especially through this pandemic-y time, it was a drag. I tell you, I was really, it's not my nature to sort of stay in the house. And I did not enjoy that period of time. So I said, I wanted to add some songs to my playlist. I have 10 songs that I play probably every morning. They keep me going because I do start early. Ever since I worked on a project called the F-105 Project, I have been waking up at 4 o'clock. And for that project, I did that because it was when you look back at Vietnam, one of the operations that people have heard about is Operation Rolling Thunder. And I got involved in writing. First, I took a book, and somebody asked me to adapt that to the screen. So I got involved in that. I wrote the script. And I love doing that. I love taking a book because if I like a book and I can see it in my head, it's really easy for me to write a script for it. So I wrote a script and I really enjoyed that. And as a matter of fact, the daughters of the pilot, the F-105 pilot who wrote the book, they were here in the studio one day. And so we got to talk about their father and about what he went through in Vietnam and in these flights of the F-105. These warriors were amazing. They took out these F-105 planes, which are very difficult planes to fly. As my husband was a pilot, and so we could really appreciate that you had to be a darn good pilot to take off an F-105. And these pilots flew mission after mission after mission. It was heartbreaking when I discovered how many were shot down and how many of the pilots landed up being in the Hanoi Hilton, not for weeks or months, but for years, many years. And many of these pilots over the years wrote books. Some of them have been on the program, as a matter of fact, like Colonel Leo Thorsness. He was on one of my earlier programs. And I play his interview every once in a while. I love to sort of go back in time and listen to him tell about what he went through. But one of the things that I discovered when I was working on the F-105 project was the importance of the ground crews. I did not, you hear about all the pilots and they are all, you know, brave and wonderful, but nobody ever writes about the ground crews. And so when I started working on this project, and I was just so taken with the ground crews. I started doing research. I was so moved by their stories that when I actually went to write the project, I had written the script for a book by Jean Basel called Pack Six, and I, of course, concentrated when I did the script. I concentrated on Jean and on his friends, the other pilots, and there was some, you know, work in the book. There was some talk about the ground crew. But when I was doing the research, that's when I got really hooked. And I started talking to the ground crewsmen. And I discovered something absolutely beautiful and heartbreaking. So many of them couldn't sleep. They had a terrible, terrible time in Vietnam. In those days, actually, they were at a secret base in Thailand, and none of us, the American public, wasn't told. Nobody was told that we were flying out of these secret bases in Thailand. And the ground crews who took care of the airplanes, who got them up and running every day, they didn't wear any protective masks in those days. They just didn't understand what was going on between their ears, not having the proper coverage, and definitely not the proper masks. I would say maybe 80% of the ground crew guys got emphysema or worse. So I started speaking to them in the night, starting around 2 o'clock. I would start getting these emails, and I would do these email chats with them. And because they couldn't sleep, and they would tell me these wonderful stories about the pilots who they loved. They were so close to the pilots, and it broke their hearts when they would watch the pilots take off. They had the early flight was at 4 a.m, and they'd watch the pilots take off, and then they would wait at the fence for the pilots to come back, and they would count the airplanes coming back. And they would write to me at 2 or 3 a.m. about how they stood at the fence waiting for their pilot, for the plane that they had serviced that morning. And they got, you know, very close to their pilots, and they would stand there and they would wait. And so often, because of the terrible, when we look now back and we think about why I often say at the end of the program, I should have been a general. When I did this research and I discovered that the pilots, the F-105 pilots in Operation Rolling Thunder, were sent on the same route at the same time, day after day after day. Well, it's no wonder they were shot down. It was ridiculous, and it was heartbreaking. And so I just loved working with them, talking to them. And I've written an entire, series of scripts for someday, we are hoping. And still, we live in hope, and that's what happens when you're dealing with Hollywood. Maybe now, with streaming video, they will listen to me. I have a few people now in Hollywood who have reconnected with me, and I hope that they're listening, because if they're, everybody's talking about Netflix and they have lost so many customers. And that's because there is nothing to watch. And my project, about Operation Rolling Thunder, which is called, the Forgotten F-105 Warriors, this is a wonderful project. So I'm doing a pitch right here I have a few Hollywood friends now who have reconnected with me or started listening to Joy on Paper since I have been having more and more talk about the books that I think would make great films. If they are listening to me, The Forgotten F-105 Warriors is ready to take off. We need a streaming video for this because it would be easily I've written 12 episodes already. So it's, I wasn't able to stop myself once I started. And we were close. We were close at one point with two of the networks. I think I told the story several times about how I went to a meeting. When you're invited to Hollywood to take a meeting, you're somewhere outside of Hollywood. I mean, first of all, it's a big deal when they invite you to take a meeting. So it depends on your mental capabilities. If you can visualize what's going to happen to you, or it's better not to visualize, because you're dealing with a whole different type of group of people than you do in everyday life. So, and this is a funny story. I never knew in the beginning, of course, I had to really learn when I was there how you dressed, because they judge you. They talk about judging you by how you dress. The worst thing to do, I discovered, was to dress up, to think that you're dressing up, because that's how you're raised. When you go to an important meeting, you want to dress up. You want to look, you wear your best. Don't do it. If you ever get asked to take a meeting, go grubby. I'm telling you, I got more respect when I went grubby than when I got dressed up. Even if I bought a designer outfit that was, I of course bought it on sale, which I'll tell you, people in Hollywood can tell if it's last season's. You see this sometimes in a series or a show, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, that's last season. They really know that. I don't know how they have the time to know that kind of thing, but they do. So when I thought I was being, once I went in an outfit that I had bought at Kmart. Well, they knew right away. But then later on, as I was still learning, but I really invested in a really nice, gorgeous suit, designer suit. It was expensive. It was so expensive. And I didn't really like it, but it was expensive. And I thought, well, it was a big mistake. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you how bad it is. I one time was wearing an outfit, and it was top to bottom, my shoes, my outfit, everything. They were all designer things. So. And I actually had, right there, just before a meeting, a man, an important man, he looked over at my bag. And he said to me, I mean, how could he say this to me? He said, that's not designer. I mean, like, oh, I just needed that right before I went into the meeting. That's not designer. Duh, yeah, I know it's not designer, but I'm here with a wonderful property to talk to you about, but I don't have a designer bag, you know. So I'm telling you, I did actually have the best luck when I wore the absolute grubbiest clothes, and I really mean grubby, that they couldn't tell where they came from. And it worked, because then they treat you with respect. It's really quite crazy. It's really quite crazy. But that's one of the things I'm hoping, you know, I get so many books, you know, that I read, and I've mentioned it to the authors who are on the program. I always know if I get a book and I start seeing it as a movie in my head, I really forget I'm reading. I sit back. I don't do anything. I don't get up to get a cup of coffee. I just don't take a break, because it's a movie. I would eat popcorn probably, because that's what I like to do at a movie. But I see it, and you know, I read quickly compared to most people, and I retain it, by the way. So sometimes I love one author said, "Well, how did you know that about my book?" And I said, "Yeah, but I read it." She said, "Oh, I didn't. They quite don't get the point that I read the books anyway." So I see a movie, and I want to tell people in Hollywood, "My goodness, don't please don't do another Little Women, another Pride and Prejudice. I they're driving me crazy with these repeats, and that's why all of these streaming places are." I think they're all nuts, because they don't have proper or interesting or fascinating films. It's just crazy. And yet, right here, I'm telling you, right here in our area, I could find 10 fantastic authors whose works would immediately be easy to turn into streaming videos. Interesting characters, something new, something different, and with at least some dialogue from the book that you could use. Because unfortunately, so many of these films that you're watching on Netflix have, or Amazon or Hulu or whatever, they don't have, it's not that they don't have any dialogue, it's that what few words they do use are all terrible. So anyway, I just want to tell people that one of the things I'm doing now with my new sort of dynamic website is I'm going to have more opportunity for authors to give their pitch, because you really have to somehow attract attention. I have talked to everybody who's been on the program, even very famous authors. You know, they might not be selling as much as they used to in the old days, because they're not getting the kind of support. They don't get the support from publishers that they used to. Even Mary Higgins Clark told me many times, "My goodness, these people don't do anything for me anymore." And she was so important. So authors really have to think out of the box. And I'm always telling people how they can reach out and try a new marketing approach. I just recently spoke to somebody who's written a military book. And yet in all of this time, he has never reached out to military people to get some, you know, reviews from them, to get some blurbs from them. It's a great book, but he's never made the He's thought, you know, I write a really wonderful book, people like it, and I'm going to put it on, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and somebody's going to come and get it. No, that's not the way it's working today. You have to make those connections. Now, it looks like Allison is not calling in, because she was supposed to call in by now. She was supposed to call in at 11 o'clock, and we were going to talk about her books. And she has written wonderful, wonderful historical novels, and I might mention a few after I take a break. But what I'm going to do, First, I think Big Ed in the control room, probably he doesn't know what the heck's going on. He's waiting for the telephone. But what we'll do is, first I want to play Book Buzz from Devon Miller. Then we'll go to commercials. And when I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about the website and what we're doing to help authors by telling them more about the essential elements of writing that they need. So let's go ahead and play the Book Buzz and go to commercials, and then I'll be back.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Already ranking in as the number one new release on Amazon for children's African history fiction within its first month of release is the book Black Boy Fly, written by bestselling author Amanda Lynch. In Amanda's sixth published book, readers get to fly across the pages with Amanda's character, MJ. This book encourages young boys to be unapologetic about their identity, history, and giftedness. The book also features gorgeous and eye-popping illustrations done by Bonnie Lemaire. As a bonus, the book includes 100 affirmations young boys can repeat with their parents and teachers to reinforce self-esteem and confidence. Amanda wrote the book as not only being a love letter to her son Amani, but to many other black and brown boys around the world. She also wanted to be a part of the change to diversify children's book literature, which is really, really cool. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. Oh, I love listening to Devon Miller's voice, and I am so very, very proud of him. He first came in to Joy on Paper just to promote his own books, Mr. Tickety Tock Clock. They are a wonderful series of books for kids, and I was so impressed with him. The minute he started talking, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I need to have him come back and talk about children's books. And now, well, we're up to 16 book buzzes that he has done. And it is such a wonderful thing that he is doing to help promote books for children. And his life is actually spent around promoting books for children. He does a lot of Zoom events and during the pandemic, and now I'm sure he's out there getting back with kids, reading aloud to them. Devon is the Sunshine Ambassador for St. Petersburg, and just wonderful, wonderful young man. And he's going to be graduating from college in a few days, I think. And so it's just, I am so honored, really, to have him as part of Joy on Paper. He has already touched the hearts of so many children, and he has helped so many authors promote their books, because that's what we want to do. And you can see the... What?
Your guest is on.
Allison?
Yes, hi.
Hi, there you are. Whoa, great. So happy. Okay. Well, I was talking about somebody else for a moment, but I was waiting for you. I'm so happy that you called in because, you know, I love your books. I've told you before, and as you know, because we also talked to Owen, you know, I just, for me, history is so important. When I was a girl growing up in northern Michigan, the one thing that I always wanted to know was, I wanted to know more about the world. And reading about history, that's what did it for me.
I could not agree more. And this current book for you as a Michigander would be very relevant because your Michigan history with Battle Creek, Michigan, Serial City, USA. This is the story of Marjorie Meriwether Post, and it's a story that begins in Serial City, USA, in your state.
I know, and it is wonderful. And I want to mention that it's called The Lives Of. So it's not, you know, it's not The Life Of. So she is pretty fantastic, isn't she?
Thank you. Yes. So The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. It's my latest book about the fascinating, iconic, leading lady of the 20th century, Marjorie Meriwether Post, who, as you said, lived incredibly rich stories. I kind of, like you said, many lives. So I kind of compare her to the Forrest Gump of the 20th century in that she had a front row seat and an active hand in shaping so many of these great moments in history that we know about. But she had way better clothing and way better home.
Oh, yes. Oh,
you know, built Mar-a-Lago with, you know, owned imperial jewelry and treasure. So she had many fascinating, magnificent lives.
That's what I love the title, because I thought, well, that says so much, because most people, you know, their story is always the life of this, the life of that. But you're right. The title was, the choice was perfect, because she did so much, and she was so multi-talented and fascinating.
Yeah. So everything from serving as the first United States ambassadress to the Soviet Union right at the beginning and the outset of World War II, you know, moving to Moscow, to being this disruptive trailblazer in the business world, where she gave Americans, her family, the Post family, gave Americans the concept of cereal and a ready-made, convenient, healthy breakfast. And then Marjorie Meriwether Post goes on and applies that idea of a ready-made, convenient meal to lunch and dinner as well. And she gives us the concept that we have today of refrigeration and frozen foods. She's the first person to mass market Bird's Eye Frozen Foods with her company. And so if you own a refrigerator or a freezer, or if you've ever had a vegetable in the middle of the winter time or a cup of orange juice, then you owe that to Marjorie Meriwether Post. She just fundamentally changed the American way of life and lifestyle. And then what she did with the wealth that she earned from that incredible business acumen was where the story gets even more fascinating, because then she goes on to leave this life that's really stunning and momentous.
Well, that's what, you know, of course, you went to Battle Creek, and a woman, you know, we hear so much about so many wealthy women today, and you don't see that they're doing this kind of absolutely amazing work and caring about people in the way that she did.
Yeah. So Marjorie Meriwether Post was called America's Empress because she lived like America's Empress. She was the wealthiest woman in the country, one of the wealthiest women in the world. But it's what she did with her wealth that I found so inspiring. So she said, "My wealth would have been a burden on my soul had I not used it to help others." So everything from Marjorie Meriwether Post, she funded the largest field hospital for the Red Cross in all of World War I France. And then during the Great Depression, she opened food canteens and soup kitchens to feed the hungry, to feed women and children. And then in World War II, she gives her fabulous yacht, which is bigger than the British royal family's imperial yacht. It's bigger than J.P. Morgan's yacht. It's called the Sea Cloud. She gives the Sea Cloud to the U.S. Navy for $1 for the U.S. Navy to use in World War II. And everything. She's doing stuff like this constantly. And you get the sense that she was on fire in the moments when she's serving others and where she's serving a cause bigger than herself. She said, "There are others out there who are wealthier than I. The only difference is I do more with mine. I put it to work." And so I found her to be fascinating, building homes for herself like Mar-a-Lago, dressing herself in Catherine the Great jewelry, but also inspiring because she did so much with her talent and her gift and her privilege, and she really shaped the world in the process.
Well, I thought that was a wonderful choice. You know, when you want to bring a period to life, she covers so many of them. important to each of those eras, as you said, World War I, World War II, and then the post-war of taking this position during the Cold War in Russia, which for a woman, really, when you look back on it, was quite an amazing feat.
Oh, totally. So she's being spied on by the KGB. She, you know, the funny little ways that she gets around the wiretaps, like running the bathtub or tapping her glass to get around the bug. And she's there as the first United States ambassador to the Soviet Union. And her directive from Franklin Roosevelt, the president, is to make friends with these Soviets because as bad as they are, if they align with Hitler, it will be an even worse scenario for the whole world. And so she's there and she's having to, you know, she loves being a hostess. She entertained at Mar-a-Lago and in Manhattan and all over America. And so she goes to Moscow determined to entertain and host and show people sort of herself as a walking advertisement for capitalism and freedom and just like her success as the American dream. And so she's mingling with the likes of Molotov, a.k.a. we've heard of Molotov cocktails, or Stalin. And the Russians, the Soviets, had never met anyone like her. You know, she was just this force. And so the years of Russia were fascinating. But as you said, every decade of her life touched on something fascinating. So you've got her on the Gold Coast of Long Island during the Roaring Twenties, the Jazz Age, when the rumor was that she was the inspiration for the book The Great Gatsby because she's hanging out with people like F. Scott Fitzgerald. And then, like, you could zoom in on every decade, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and she's just doing amazing things and mingling with presidents and royals and movie stars. And her life is just the stuff of legend.
Well, with all of your books, of course, you capture what I love about historical novels, that you capture the time and you take us back into a place so... it's so seamless that we feel we are there. And that is the talent of a great writer. And you are, I think you are one of the best historical novelists around. Really, your books will last, I think, for a long time. People will be going back to them as references because of your thorough research.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So I wrote this book, The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. I wrote it as a novel, as you said, historical fiction, because I think that is one of the gifts that historical fiction can give us. And I love historical fiction as both a reader and a writer. It puts us as flies on the wall to these great moments. You know, with The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post, we are living history with Marjorie, and we're meeting these epic, iconic characters from history, and we're seeing these incredible moments. And so it can be educational while also, I think, being accessible and entertaining in a way that may be a more intimidating heavy biography might not be for everyone.
Exactly. Now, for me, I like the heavy biographies,
yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you do. But I like the idea of making it accessible because I think it's so important for people to be able to place in time events. So many people don't see history somehow. In schools, they actually ruin history in schools. They don't know how to teach it because they really need books like yours. Now, if in high school they gave kids this book, everybody would find something fascinating in it. The boys would understand, you know, it's part of the business part. They'd really be intrigued in all of that and how she, you know, worked and had all these business ideas. The girls will love the fashion, you know, not to be stereotypical, but somehow you have to attract kids in school to say, yeah, you know, history is interesting. And to shove this kind of stuff that they give in schools, I just don't know how we can get through. I think that's one reason, you know, so many parents do homeschool, because when I was homeschooling, I let my kids read novels about, yeah. You know, historical novels. And so they really got into it. They knew that, you know, mommy had 100 books about Napoleon on the shelf.
Yeah.
So once they read, you know, a few novels, then when they wanted to know details, they could go and look at you know, the source material. And I love source. Yeah. Don't you love that word, source material?
Source material. Yeah, history should come to life because history is the furthest thing from boring. And it doesn't need to be dry or stale because really history gives us the best raw materials for juicy, dramatic stories. And that was how I felt when writing The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. I just, you know, her life is relatively recent. Her daughter, Dina Merrill, the movie star, just recently passed away a few years ago. So this is relevant history still today. And so I just thought, gosh, the material here is so good, I would be crazy not to stick close to it. So I stuck to the history because I couldn't have made this stuff up if I wanted.
No, I mean,
so outlandish.
Do they have this book for sale at Mar-a-Lago?
They have this book for sale, I know, at Hillwood, her home in Washington, D.C., that's now a museum that has all of her priceless Russian treasure and treasure from Versailles and Napoleon. Mar-a-Lago, I'm not sure if they sell this book there. I know they've read it there, but they have it at bookstores and online bookstores, wherever books are sold.
Yeah, but they should carry it there at there at the golf course, because well, her vision and how she built that house and all the other houses, she had a clear vision of what she wanted. She knew what she wanted.
Clear vision. Marjorie Meriwether Post was a woman who knew what she wanted, and as she said in this book, when I wrote the scene where she's building Mar-a-Lago, no architect could wrap their head around what exactly she wanted, because she wanted to take the layout plan of the great camps up in the Adirondacks, where there's like a central lodge building and then there's a bunch of outbuildings. And all these Palm Beach architects were saying, what, we're going to build a bunch of log cabins, you know, on Palm Beach Island? She said, no, I want that layout. But then she wanted it to look whimsical and beautiful and stunning and totally different. And so I have her saying, Marjorie Meriwether Post does not follow trends. She sets them. She didn't want another Mediterranean type of villa. So she hires the set designer, the director, for her good pal Florence Ziegfeld, who gave us the Ziegfeld Follies, you know, Broadway smash. And so she hires Joseph Urban, who did the set designs and costumes for Ziegfeld Follies. And so that is why it's sort of fantastical and whimsical and unlike anything else that had ever been built, because Marjorie set trends. She didn't follow them.
I love that. I love that scene, actually. I think that's so wonderful. It says so much about her. And, of course, also the fact that she built quality. When they built
quality.
Yeah, they didn't skimp on anything when they were working with her.
Right, right. No, exactly. Her husband said, yeah, Marjorie told me she wanted a little cottage by the sea. Look what we got. You know, gold fixtures and not just drain pipes, but drain pipes that are carved in the shapes of monkeys and just everything. You know, Marjorie did everything to the utmost.
Well, did you get to go into Mar-a-Lago?
I've been to Mar-a-Lago on the outside. I did not go in, and the reason is because when I was doing my research, this was March of 2020.
Uh-huh.
My appointment set. I'd spoken to the grounds manager. I'd planned my visit. I'd booked my flights. I'd gotten clearance from security, and then COVID happened, and that was March of 2020 when everything shut down, including the club, and I have very small unvaccinated children. My husband is a stroke survivor, so I was not able to get on the plane and fly to go visit Mar-a-Lago, unfortunately. But there is incredible source material, as you said, out there, photographs, eyewitness reports of people I spoke with who had been to Marjorie's dances at Mar-a-Lago. And so I was able to fully feel like I was immersing myself in sort of the sights and sounds of her world.
Oh, that's great, because I like you, I've been to the outside, haven't had that invitation to get inside there.
Yeah.
But I would think actually that a certain woman who lives there would like your book, because I know she likes history, and I think she'd like all of your books.
Are you talking about the former First Lady?
Yes.
I do know she's reading it. I did hear through the grapevine from a friend in Palm Beach who was very kind to gift her with a copy.
Good, because I hope that you... because this is exactly the kind of book that she would enjoy, as she would enjoy all of your books.
Thank you.
Because I think, like you and like me, we have an appreciation for history. We understand, I think, the joys of traveling to Europe at certain periods in our life, so that we've walked in the footsteps of famous people through history, and it really connects us.
It really does, and it's so relevant and so important, because it's true that history repeats itself. And it's also so true that the actions and the character and the integrity of individuals, it matters. You know, we each have a role to play, and I think Marjorie was a woman who knew that, you know? If not me, then who? She stepped up time and again when history was happening and unfolding in front of her, and people needed a leader, and people needed women of character. And if she were alive today, I would want to vote for her for president. And her story is sort of one of evolution over the course of the 20th century, where you see the public role of a woman evolving, and she is able to take a bigger public-facing role in her own life and leadership as the story evolves. Because in the beginning, when we start the book, is The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post, it's sort of Edwardian. It's sort of the Downton Abbey era, and she is the heiress of this post-food empire. She's the only daughter of Edith Post. The Post empire is hers, but she can't take a role as a leader of the company because she's a woman. And it's always kind of understood that it will be her husband who sits for her at the table with the board of directors. And then you see, as the decades go on and the role of women kind of expands and women get the right to vote, and with World War I and then the Great Depression and really World War II, women are taking more leadership roles. You've got women, you know, serving in the Roosevelt administration. Then Marjorie steps up and says, hey, no more of this. I've been running the show from behind the scenes. I'm the one with the brains anyway. It's my family's name on the company. I'm going to sit on the board of directors. And I love that moment for her when she really steps into her own power and finds her voice even louder as a leader.
Oh, I love that. I love that, too. And I love the jewelry. Tell us a little bit about the jewelry, because as I mentioned, I have 100 books about Napoleon.
Yes, you love Napoleon.
Yeah, I do. I do.
So, this is amazing, because I've written about Napoleon too. I wrote The Queen's Fortune, where there's a scene where Napoleon gives his second bride after Josephine, he gives his Habsburg Empress Marie Louise this amazing jewelry, Well, Marjorie Merriweather Post got her hands on that jewelry and became hers a century later. So I loved that my books were, you know, it was coming full circle. For the necklace was making another appearance, the wedding gift Marjorie had. And Marjorie, because she was in Russia, as we spoke about, and she was in Moscow only a few decades after the Romanovs had been murdered, and the Soviets are in power, and they're desperate for cash. It's a time of famine. It's a time of war. The Russians are starving. And so the Soviet leaders place no significance or attachment to all of this treasure that they've looted and sacked and plundered from hundreds of years of Romanov rule and patronage. And so they have all this jewelry from the Romanovs and all the aristocrats sitting, collecting dust in warehouses that they're willing to sell to the highest bidder. And Marjorie's there. She's in Russia. She has money. She scoops up as much Russian treasure as she can get her hands on and becomes one of the largest collectors of Russian jewelry in the entire world. She has Anastasia's diamonds. She has Catherine the Great's tea service. It's the stuff she was able to get and bring into her own collection. It was amazing. And so if you go to her final home in Washington, D.C., Hellwood Museum now, you can see so much of that. And it's really just stunning. She really did live like an empress.
Oh, I've been there, and oh, I get chills when I think about where this jewelry on who was wearing this jewelry. I get so thrilled about it. I have to tear me away.
Right.
Wow. I think you've done such a beautiful job with this book, and I hope that you're getting out there more and getting younger. Younger women really should read more history. I think they'd learn a lot. You know, get off of the Twitter world and all of that, and get into something fun like this that will, you know, first of all, entertain them in a nice way, but also teach them so much. And when you see the empowerment that a woman of intelligence and taste and what she can accomplish, she really, it's a stunning story of a great woman that really is underappreciated. And I think you've done a great service here in writing this book. And I think, you know, of course, I hope that, I always hope that, like, I hope all of your books become films. But this is a makings for a wonderful, wonderful series.
Thank you so much. I would love to see it on a series. I think with the combination of the great characters that come in and out, and the great settings and the costumes and just the moments in history, almost like an American version of The Crown, because she was America's Empress. I would love that. I'm working on it. It's The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. And I'm thankful to you for all you do to support books and authors.
Well, it's available online. And tell people your website.
Allison Pataki. So A-L-L-I-S-O-N. It's Allison with two L's. Pataki, PATAKI.com. So I'm Allison Pataki on online, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and the book is The Magnificent Lives of Marjorie Post. It's available wherever books are sold.
Get this book. People, get this book for yourself and then give it as a gift. I think the wonderful time at this time of the year, people have to sort of get outside. We've had enough of this pandemic-y time. We've had enough of being stuck in the house. Take this book and sit under a tree, sit on the patio, sit by the pool, and read about a woman who is inspirational, that shows, you know, we see so many women on television who have fabulous amounts of money, and they don't do anything great for humanity. I can tell you that. It's just wasted. And here, a woman could do so much. And I think you've done a great job with this book, Allison.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I look forward to hearing from readers when they can pick up.
Yeah, exactly. Get in contact and stay in contact, because we need to get more young women reading. They have to get back to books and get off of these electronic devices. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Or they can read on electronic.
Well, yeah, they can read. Yeah, but not tweeting and Facebooking and all that stuff, all TikToking. They need some depth. And this book gives
yourself in a great story.
Exactly. Oh, you can immerse yourself.
Yeah. Immerse yourself.
Exactly. That's the best thing to do. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a joy to talk to you, Allison. Oh, and say hi to Owen.
I will.
I need Owen to come back. I want some more Napoleon talk. We have to do actually an entire hour of Napoleon talk because, as I said,
I think Owen would be thrilled to speak with you about Napoleon.
You know, I have some source material. Some of my books are antiques, you know, from like 1832, 18. So they're really great books that I will get to talk to you guys about because you're both history lovers.
We are indeed.
Okay.
Well, in particular.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Good. Okay. She managed to call in. That's wonderful. Her books are so good. She has a whole series of historical novels. And you will enjoy all of them. But this one, this new one, exactly. People don't know about sometimes you just don't know about a character. And when you find out the story, well, you'll love it. I hope that you'll get it. I just want to also remind people again about my website and the fact that next week Carol J. Perry will be on Tuesday. Oh my goodness, she has a release. You can go to her Facebook page, Carol J. Perry. She has a book coming out, Till Death, and Barnes and Noble is running a special 25% discount for pre-orders. So you can still pre-order her book, Till Death, at Barnes & Noble, and you get 25% discount. Go to her Facebook page, and you have the details there and the promo code. And that's a good deal, 25% off if you pre-order, and you'll have the book next Tuesday. And I will have Carol J. Perry right here in the studio next Tuesday so we can talk about her wonderful book 12, oh my goodness. 7 years ago, she was here for book one, and now it's 7 years later, and we're at book 12, and we're going to have a spring wedding. Wow, it took us 12 books to get Lee Barrett married, but it's exciting, and Carol will be here. And meanwhile, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And you never know, and you won't know, if you don't start writing. So get out there, pick up a pencil, pick up a pen. You don't need a computer. Just start writing. Sit under a tree and start writing. It's a beautiful, beautiful day here in glorious Clearwater, Florida. And then say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. It's been a lovely day. We managed to get through. And even though, oh, and Ellie Marr, congratulations. I hope you named the baby. I told you to name the baby Wednesday. That's a great day. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.